This tape is being made for the Avon Historical Society. The person being interviewed is George Cullinan, who lives at 38 Lacey Street, Avon, New York. The date of the interview is June 18, 2002.
I will follow the guidelines as written. I was born at 8 Park Place, which is now non-existent because our property was acquired by the village to build the present village complex, fire station, village hall, and village offices. I was born April 9th, 1927, the third of six children, five of which reached adulthood. Danny, the youngest, died as an infant in December of 1935. Our family members, five boys and one girl, currently three are living. The oldest, Francis, Mary Ellen Burke, the youngest, and myself, Charles, the second oldest, passed away 4 years ago in Buffalo. Soon the fifth, in order, passed away 2 years ago. Francis was born on the Canisius farm, now owned by the Call Farms of Batavia. Our parents, Frank D. Cullinan and Mary Agnes Moran. Dad passed away in April of 1937. Mom died in July 1975. Mom remained a widow and a so-called single parent for 38 years. Our entire family was raised in Park Place. As I said prior, their residence was sold to the village after Mom's death. We were fortunate children and adults to have an unusual single Uncle Richard, nominally referred to by everyone as Uncle Dick. He passed away in December 1945. How did our family come to Avon? My father, Frank, was born in Geneseo on a farm that his parents worked for the Wadsworth family. Our grandparents migrated to Geneseo from County Cork, Missionhead, Ireland. The Wadsworths were a noted landed gentry who had vast holdings in the Genesee Valley. Dad, Uncle Dick, moved with their parents to Route 5 in Caledonia, 1 mile west of Canawagas, to manage a Wadsworth farm called West Andean. The barns are now in disrepair. Next, Dad and Uncle Dick and Grandma rented the Canisius farm adjacent to the Five Arch Bridge. The farm bordered on the Canisius Outlet on the east and the Genesee River on the west. The southerly boundary is the current Fountainville Road. Until the mid-40s, the easterly boundary was the Avon-Mount Morris Electrified Railway. The abandoned rail bed exists in the Five Arch Bridge, but the proper easterly boundary now would be Route 39. Mom and Dad were married on March 17, 1922. In St. Agnes Church. Francis was the first born in March of 1924 on the Canisius farm. Our parents and Uncle Dick retired from farming the same year. They purchased the Ford agency from the Mervis, who had a service station and a showroom on Park Place. On the east was our residence, which Mrs. Mervis ran as a tea room and a home for her family. The repair garage and storage were located behind these two buildings. Charles, the next born, arrived in September 1925. I was born April 1927. Tim, January 1930. Mary Ellen, September 1932. And Daniel, in May of 1934. school. I went to Avon High School for kindergarten. St. Agnes had grades 1 through 8. I remained in St. Agnes until June 1940. Thereafter, I attended Avon High from 1940 to 1943. Note, I said I attended Avon High from 1940 to 1943. I graduated in the first class of the Avon Central School in June of 1944. St. Agnes maintained double classrooms where 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 were combined and were taught by a single St. Joseph nun. I entered kindergarten at Avon High School at age 5 and graduated from Avon Central School at the age of 17. We walked to school each morning, walked home for lunch, and returned to school for the afternoon schedule, and our classes were out around 4 o'clock. My classmates, yes. Presently, Dorothy Coyne, Doris Dealer, Ted Coyne, John Steele, Joe Campanella, Ralph Woodruff, Gene Coyne, Tony Pusateri, Gene Maloney, Dick Coyne, Veronica Farr, and Ken Witherell are living. I may have missed some, but I named quite a few. Students in class, 18 to 20 in first grade, and we shared this classroom with second grade, also about 18 to 20. My brother Charlie was in the second grade, and he preceded me through school and graduated from Avon High School in June of 1943. The classes were evenly divided with boys and girls. I stated prior that there were 4 classrooms containing 2 classes each. At one time, there were 2 classrooms in the basement because on the first floor was a nurse's office and a principal's office. We did not participate in physical exercise. We had limited use of libraries and resources. Each room had a pull-down map of the world to use when we studied history and geography, the latter being almost a lost subject. We had assigned seats which were wooden top with ink wells, wooden backs, and wooden folding seats. These seats were engaged for a dual purpose. Each day, we stood for the Pledge of Allegiance. Immediately thereafter, we knelt on the seat in a down position and offered morning prayers facing the back of the room. Thereafter, we remained seated and faced the front of the room where our St. Joseph nun had class from a raised platform, commonly referred to then as a rostrum. Immediately, classes resumed with the teacher requesting our homework that we pass from the rear to the front, where it was gathered by the student in the front seat and given to the teacher. Shortly, the teacher, to keep us busy, had each class practice the Mount Palmer method to improve our handwriting. The push-pull in the circles could not be spread out. They had to be neat. They had to be contained within the lines on that special paper. Unfortunately, we did not have the luxury of ballpoint pens. Do you remember I described our desk? Each top had an inkwell that held India ink. Sometimes, which was often, a girl with ringed hair, and if the young man seated behind her was a person with imagination, the pigtail was dipped into the inkwell. Now there was admonishment from the teacher, and punishment was meted out. Some of us boys spent several classroom hours sitting on the rostrum under the watchful eye of the teacher. We were subjected to 3 R's, but the additional R that received daily attention was religion with the Baltimore Catechism as the text. Rest assured, we were drill daily on the other arms. Weekly, we stood on the opposite sides of the room in a single file for spelling bees and rudimentary math such as timetables. In the upper grades, we were challenged to bees on geography. As I said earlier, almost the last subject. We relied on textbooks, maps, and newspapers for research. We did not have the teaching aids available today. Telephone, television, and computer technology were concepts then. The competition was keen, and I enjoyed every day in school. The school year was equivalent today, September 5, 6 through June 20th, with recess at Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter. However, we had the privilege of the neighbor feast days of the church. We had no organized sports, we had no band, we were busy in pickup games and sports depending on the season. Band and voice lessons were optional with our parents, who solicited these services from instruction in town. Daily life. We did not have the opportunity of boredom. We had daily chores when we were youngsters, such as bed making, shining shoes, cleaning dishes from the table, at meal times. When we reached 12 to 14 years, we were able to door to door selling magazines such as Liberty, Saturday Evening Post, Ladies' Home Journal. Francis, the oldest, was the first to have a daily Democrat and Chronicle group. When Charles, Tim, and I reached this age bracket, we had separate groups. Charles had the Times Union, which was his afternoon group. We were successful entrepreneurs. Francis started out with 20 to 25 dailies. Before long, we had three groups, which required adult supervision. Uncle Tom Coyne and Uncle Dick helped us because Uncle Tom Coyne had a pickup truck so that he could drive and the boys on the route, especially on Sunday, because on Sunday we had many more papers. After completing the house delivery, we had permission from Mr. Baird with the Avon Harbor to set up a station to sell DNC Sunday editions to townsfolks who were daily attendees at the various churches. As I stated, our original room, Francis had 20 to 25 papers. It grew to over 200 papers sales on Sunday. The DNC initiated a sales promotion. The carrier who had the greatest increase in circulation was awarded an excellent trip to the Army-Navy game in Philadelphia. Francis was the winner because we pulled our sales in his name. As we grew older, in addition to daily papers, we were expected to assist on Saturdays with the usual home duties, clean our rooms, help with the laundry, no electric gas dryers then, so we had to hang laundry outdoors regardless of the weather. In the wintertime, it was fun. Everything froze stiff. We had to mop the kitchen floor, the windows, polish the furniture, and vacuum the rugs. Each evening we rotated with the dishwasher and the drying afterwards the dinner dishes. Several times this turned into a melee and Mom had to intervene to establish a calm atmosphere. Sports. We played every sport to prevail. Baseball, basketball, football. These outdoor sports were played in our backyard, college's backyard, the rear of the library, vacant lot on Door and Isham Avenues. Believe it or not, we played basketball in our kitchen during inclement weather. The village park then was the principal area for baseball and football. I must recount that New York State was rebuilt in Routes 5 and 20 in 1938 and 1939. It was open except for the monument and the WCTU water fountain. The park was not a finished product for years prior to 1940. There wasn't any curbing. The high school had in the summertime each Saturday night on Bandstand. There was no curbing as yet, so cars would park facing the bandstand for the concerts. People brought folding chairs and stood during each concert. I can remember these events from 1934 to 1938. The concerts were discontinued from the band instructor accepted a teaching position elsewhere. Another annual event was the circus coming to town. These were enjoyed in the rear of Tyler Garage, present-day Evanstown Plaza, or on the back of vacant lot, as I mentioned, at Dorr and Isham Avenues. The fire department always had an annual carnival staged in the village park before it was refurbished, several new trees and the lawn was seen, and the present curving installed. Swimming, we had two favorite spots because we could walk. Clutch Hole and Driving Park, non-existent, is washed up. It's part of the Canisius Outlet and the river absorbed. Mouth was found because the water is gated by the bridge. In the wintertime, they harvested ice and stored it at the present antique store. Some of us visited BAB in Canisius Outlet on Littleville Road, west of the present LAL in Wheeler's Woods. There was always ample water in the outlet because Canisius Lake was a water source of power at Light's Mill, presently Roger Strip's homestead. And a mill race on east side of Canisius Outlet that fed the mill. The prior home of Walter Monroe and now owned by his grandson, David Underhill. Canisius Lake was forbidden because of two things. We lacked transportation, and it was considered unsafe for non-swimmers. We spent weekends at home. We had to generate our own entertainment, plus we were busy with the DNC roots. Holidays. We celebrated these holidays in the following calendar manner. On the 4th of July, we had a family reunion at the Gavin Farm on Poplar Hill Road. Every family in the extended Moran Hayes family brought trout provisions, and at nightfall, Grandpa Moran and the Gavin boys had a fireworks display. Thanksgiving was a Moran family gathering at Uncle Tom and Aunt Ellen Moran on Pole Ridge Road, what we call Breezy Heights, which is owned presently by Bob Burr. Christmas again was another Moran family gathering at Uncle Tom and Aunt Weezy at home on 55 Lacey Street, presently owned and occupied by the Grahams. Easter, the Moran gathering at 8 Park Place, present day Village Complex. The Moran reunion, siblings Mary Agnes Coleman, J. Louise Coyne, and Thomas Moran, and their extended families. Transportation. We walked to church, school, and whatever because Mom had a handy paraphrase. Used shoe leather express. When Dad was living, he took us to Red Wing Stadium to see exhibition games, guest house game, St. Louis Cardinals. Also took us to National Clothing Company for our good clothes, otherwise we were outfitted at Keith Carey's, Gilbert's, Crossers. Uncle Tom Coyne had no children, so he provided fatherhood to several of us. He took us to rodeo shows at Edgerton Park and the Monroe County Fair. This segment could be endless for the large family and our association with several large families, either in school or in our playmates. We had mumps, we had chicken pops, we had others. The highlight, contacted scarlet fever. Back then, it was bad news. Mary Ellen had to be inquisitive, being very young. She had to see how sick her brother was. The house was quarantined with big red posters on each entryway. Dr. Collins posted those signs. Francis, Tim, and I had to sleep in makeshift bedrooms to avoid exposure. As a matter of fact, when the quarantine was lifted, all the bedding, mattresses, towels, curtains had to be disposed of by vermin. And this was the edict of the health officer, who was also Dr. Thomas. The usual remedy was let nature take its course. When I was a junior in high school, I was diagnosed with yellow jaundice. I was absent from school to eliminate contagion with the other students. I had to withdraw from the football team due to the weakness that was caused. The remedy at that point was remain quiet, without bright lights, no sunshine, and drink clear liquids. Park Place West, Park Inn, East Residence, Dr. Perry's residence and offices. He was a railroad physician. This was our local vicinity in around the park. Dr. Squire is a general practitioner. Keith Diner wouldn't exist. The design of Episcopal Church, Howie's Tea Room, the Livingston House, St. Agnes School in Conroe. They all embraced the circles we know today. Local stores on the Genesee Street. On the east side, we had the post office, which is now a present building owned by Ted Coyne. The Park Theater was adjacent to St. George Hotel. Prior to Woody's, or what is now present day, what was Woody's then, was also Hardy's Fire Shop. And then the Avon Fire Department, Stevenson's Furniture, and Dry Cleaning. On the west side, Lacey's Hardware on the corner where Tim Ingersoll's office is today, Rose Barbershop, Gilbert's Furnishings, Farmer's Drugstore, the A&P Food Store, the Avon Hardware, the Union Trust Bank, Ty's Shoe Store, later Market Basket, Bolton's Bar and Grill, and Pool Room, a shoe repair shop, Varlow's Restaurant, Hart Store, Red and White Food Store, Red's Meat Market, Gilbert's Newsstand, Lusso's, J.D. Carson Insurance, Marshall Hardware, and the Blacksmith, which was later the Nardinger Home Building. On West Main Street on the south side, we had a hair salon, the telephone company, Murphy's Livery, D'Angelo's Five and Dime. Now this is an addendum. This is not part of the regular session. The day after graduation from Avon Central School, I said to my mom, guess I better set my sights on additional schooling in college. Mom said, George, you're all set. But she reached into a cubbyhole in her writing desk and presented me with a letter of acceptance in Notre Dame. Mom, let's talk about it. She concluded, try it. You'll like it. I look back to this terse statement to reflect how profound that simple phrase was. I was 17 years old, so I was exempt from selective service, but I could volunteer for active military service. Again, another conclusive statement from Mom. Wait for the call from the draft board in Genesee. Until then, Mom's advice was never lengthy. It was succinct and accurate. I completed a semester at Notre Dame and received word in April 1945 to report to the draft. I simply volunteered for the Naval Service, and I reported to the Sampson Naval Base on Lake Seneca near Geneva. With the conclusion of World War II, I was discharged from the Navy. I served on the aircraft carrier Terrible. It is either scrapped or it is in excuse the pause. Mothballs in August of 1946. The timetable prohibited my return to Notre Dame until the second in January of 1947. My first semester at Notre Dame was an unusual experience. I was a civilian among others in all age groups, freshmen, seniors to graduate students, numbering 545. The remainder of the student body, some 6,000 strong, were in the Army, Navy, Air Force officer training program. Bill Bruckle, another native, was enrolled in the V-12 program at Notre Dame. The military used the physical plant easily because Notre Dame had several residence halls, dining facilities, sports facilities, teaching facilities, and faculty that fit the military needs. It was my relationship with my cousin, Bill Moore, who was a Notre Dame student prior, and he continued in the Navy program at Notre Dame. I studied the merits of Navy. Deliver good residency, good meals aboard ship, and on the oceans. I had no intention of a military career, however. I graduated in June of 1950 and accepted a position of a financial trainee with Associates Investment Headquarters in South Bend. Associates Investment then was an agency that financed and insured on. I was assigned to the Washington, D.C. office and was thankful. Because of the history of the city, it was a wonderful experience having my family visit the famous city. Martha and I were married on July 21st, 1951. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment in Arlington, Virginia. Martha accepted a teaching position as a second grade teacher in the Arlington school system. In inclement weather, I drove her to work, otherwise she carpooled or walked. I worked in the Esso building on Constitution Avenue, down the hill from the Capitol. I had to drive there because there was not adequate ground transportation system in existence. In May of 1952, Mr. Baird, owner of the Avon Hardware, was experiencing some health problems. He wrote asking that I visit him in the near future on a weekend to discuss an appointment. I had assurances from him that I would be provided with benefits and generous compensation. I exacted an agreement with him that I would be offered the purchase of the store when he chose to retire. He did on December 31st, 1954. Tim and I were co-owners until June 1971. I accepted the sales position with Rubber Set Company, selling paint supplies, but no paint sales involved. I worked here for 4 years before accepting a sales position in the wholesale hardware business. This I liked. I pursued this endeavor until June 1978. With my success, my sales district continued to expand. The good old leave on Monday, return on Friday. I enjoyed my family. Mary Joan, born in 1953, Richard in 1955, and Peter in 1958, and was incompatible with my conspicuous absence. I accepted the position of field auditor with off-track betting, headquartered in Batavia in 1978. Remained there until my retirement in 1992. I was elected to the town board as a council person in the fall of 1979. I served the community for 20 years, retiring on December 31st, 1999. I guess I got lost. I lost this continuity. Let me back you up. I was telling you about the streets and the places on the streets. So let me continue here. On West Main Street, if you can picture it, going down on the south side, beyond the D'Angelo Five Dime, was the Lockhart Auto Repair, Deepest Valley Food Market, Clark Chevrolet, and Anderson Miller. On the West Main, the north side, there was Livingston Hotel, D'Angelo Shoe Store, Kate Carey's Furnishings, a variety store, Island Meat Market, Greensburg's Furnishing, Wyland's Restaurant, Joe Matt's Barbershop, the Irby Railroad Station, and Cushing's Service Station. Now, notable events, Governor Roosevelt stopped in the village, Hadleyburg's Ice Mobile, Army deployment, and Erie Railroad prior to World War II. Men were selected then to go into the service. Graduation. Who attended St. Agnes School had graduation awards given by the pastor, Father Mumford. We went home for cake and ice cream and the usual pen and pencil kits. Avon Central, we were the first graduates from the Central School System. We were in the midst of World War II in 1944. We simply adjourned to our homes for cake and ice cream. Here we received monetary gifts because some of us were enrolled in college. Several students were conscripted or completed school. The remainder volunteered for certain services, and those who were not physically fit were drafted into the Army. When I was in high school, I was fascinated by the activity of the Erie Railroad, the freight station, the teletype, service, and several trains that serviced Caledonia and other towns on the Buffalo Line. There was a Corning, Hornell routes that went through Littleville, McQueen Switch, Lakeville, and then transfer plants in New York City. I used to sit and marvel at the enormity of the steam engines. There was a water tower on Rochester Street. Now, if you traveled down Prospect Street to Rochester Street, it was in full view across the street on the railroad property. The engines would take on the water supply to convert to steam pump. The roundhouse was situated where the VR farm exists today. If I were the only youngsters around, the engineers would let me ride to the roundhouse where the engines were serviced. There was the electrified passenger service that went to Mount Morris, Geneseo, over the Five Arch Bridge. Passengers would board and discharge at Elm Place Industry and continue on to Rochester to work and shop. Who was the most influential person in my life? I've got to be very careful here, but I have to be honest. Probably, I'd have to say my mother, Mary Agnes Moran Colonnay. She was a very calm, serene, thoughtful, well-educated, yet fair. She was fair and firm. She was an erudite. She graduated magna cum laude from college. She was qualified to teach Latin, French, Greek, German, and English, the most difficult subject there was to teach. Now I have to say, with great gratitude, my wife, Martha, of 51 years, and our siblings, Mary Jo, Rick, Pete, and our grandchildren, Cody and Courtney. English, as I said, with my mother, was very difficult because she had a statement. She said that for every rule, there was an exception in grammar. Secondly, slang was prevalent in everyday conversation. Work. We learned a work ethic instilled in us by our mother. She was a marked believer that a busy person had to organize his daily routine and work eliminated and or decreased idle time. As I said prior, she encouraged us to establish a customer base of magazine sales and oversaw our time as D&C carriers. In the summers of 1938, 40, we worked on two farms, working with the fields on Uncle Tom Moran and Uncle Tom Coyle. We learned to shock wheat, pile hay and rows, pick corn by hand, weed beans. In the fall of 1941, Mr. Alfred Baird, the owner of the Avon Hardware, approached my mother to specify working with him. I was hired to sweep the floors in the front sidewalk daily prior to school. After school, I reported to receive inventory, price it, and put it in its proper place in the store. I was also required to sell merchandise to any and all customers. Mr. Baird gleaned that I could deal with the public because he observed my ability in the sales of magazines in the DNC newspapers. I reported to work at 7:30, and the store closed at 6 p.m. except on Saturdays at 10 p.m. The farming community at that time had a ritual of coming to town to shop for clothing, pharmaceuticals, groceries, meats on Saturday. Business in town. When I was growing up, Snyder Packing, which became Birdseye, then General Foods, and presently Kraft, a wholly owned subsidiary of Philip Morris. The Erie Railroad was a very principal place. Leaning Machine, the building is now gone, that was on the corner of Spring, and Route 39 is now the nice yard of Kraft. It was across the street from the International Harbor Sales and Services. Sales and Services, DeLangelo's Macaroni, we had Watkins Laundry, we had Boer Brothers Coal, we had Post Brothers Gasoline and Lubricants, we had the Livingston House, we had the M&M, St. George, the Heavy Tea Room, the Jolly Farmer Restaurant, which is now a home for the state people. In addition, we had Narder Mohawk, we had Rochester Telephone, we had New York Telephone, we had Lights Mill in Louisville. I enumerated the several mercantile establishments earlier. The largest industry business was farming and remains so today, although we have seen some radical changes, especially in the dairy farming. Depression. Those were bad, bad days. We were old enough to feel the effects, and we could witness that many visitors in our door begging for a bowl of soup and some crackers. We learned a very cogent phrase. A nickel is a lot of money. We had no allowances and we gave our wages to Mom. She banked the excess and allowed us to have some spending. This was a time when hand-me-down clothing was a household word. We had Sunday and dress up days of work, we donned blue jeans as clothing. Today, they control the market. I do not even own a pair, thank God. Home canning and preserving some cuts of meat was important. We canned several homegrown vegetables. Bacon was one of them. We had fresh turkey at Thanksgiving and Christmas time. No such thing as freezers back then or frozen foods. Flour, sugar were purchased in big lots, 50-pound bags. Bread rolls were homemade as well as pastries. We learned to eat all food combinations. Leftovers were common, yes. We had to hash every form, and we were required to ground the ingredients in preparation of these meals. Peanut butter and jam sandwiches were the daily staple. World War II. Vividly. December 7th, 1941, on Sunday, I was attending an Avontown team basketball game at the high school gym when the news was announced. As people gathered for the game, at that time, Avon supported our female basketball games too. I can recall Marge Schoen, Teal Henderson, Martha Kellogg, and several others who made up the female basketball team, and they were good. The Avontown men's basketball team was stellar with players like Howard Schoen, Bill Henderson, Smitty Welsh, Dale Wells, Billy Moran, Bill Sutterby, Nunzio Caniglio, and Dick Boer as the manager. They generally played in the high school gym on Sundays. All of this activity was discontinued with a full-scale war. Transportation. My father always had a car, but he died very suddenly in April. 37. He had access because he and Uncle Dick had the Ford agency. Mom did not have a license, but this was prevalent because females did not drive back then. There were exceptions. Aunt Louise Coyne always had wheels, so we relied on her for transportation. We visited Rochester infrequently because Evan had mercantile outlets to serve our daily needs. However, we did go to rodeos, Red Wing baseball games, Section 5 playoff basketball games at the U of R in the gym and at the hospital. In 1943, Evan, a team of which I was a member, and it was unique because Francis, Charles, and I were members of that team. We won Section 5 B Division Championship, first ever. The highlight, as I said, were the three Conan boys who were team managers, Francis, Charles, and myself. There is a banner in the school gym verifying the same, and I collected monies from the living players to purchase that banner from John Smith, the athletic director of Evan Central School. This is a gray area, but I am guessing purchased banner about 15 years ago. The cars, we had one until April 1937. Aunt Louise, the funeral directors, priests, and the ministers, the doctors, the school principal, Lucille's and Davin Meat Market, because they delivered provisions to homes. The women in the households and housekeepers would call these stores, Tubby Wright and the Davin boys would deliver in tin tray. Milk was delivered by Bill Smith, Elm Place, Martin Puffer, Howard Anderson's family moved from Livonia and established a door-to-door delivery from their home and milk facility on Wadsworth Avenue. Home milk was delivered in quart glass bottles where the cream separated and gathered in the neck of the bottle. Quite often in the wintertime, with freezing temperatures, the contents would freeze, forcing the paper cap and the cream rise like a large spring flower bud. Several people used the trains, especially in World War II, because gasoline was rationed and auto production was displaced with airplanes and military vehicles for the war effort. The day of the auto was post-war, and life returned to normalcy. Remember, most autos were black, very little.